Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to our Legal Insight series. I'm Jill Bloom, Group Publisher of Roofing Contractor, Walls and Ceilings, and Building Enclosure. And I'm honored to be speaking with Trent Cotney of Adams and Reese. Thank you, Trent, for joining me.
Hey, Jill. It's good to see you again.
Great to see you always. So lots to talk about, as always. There's never a lack of things going on in the construction industry. One of the things you were just mentioning to me that clearly is very important is some of the substitutions that contractors are having some issues with. Can you tell everybody what they need to know?
Absolutely. So one of the biggest issues, you know, we've talked about it plenty of times, Jill, on previous podcasts. One of the things that we're seeing is because of the lack of materials, the unavailability of core materials in roofing and construction. Contractors are having to go outside and look for, you know, other potential avenues. And we've already seen a lot of increase in defect claims as a result of contractors using things like Chinese fasteners and, you know, other things that are coming overseas that may have not been vetted through the same standards that, you know, that we have here. One of the things that was interesting that came out here just recently at the end of May was that a federal court here in Florida issued an injunction, a ban against using certain types of Brazilian plywood because of poor quality and potential safety risk. This plywood had been used for decking and a variety of other things and just did not meet the required standards despite having a PS1 certificate, which was required for use here in the States. So one of the things that I anticipate that we're going to see is as the material volatility, you know, continues over the next year or so, there's going to be more and more defect claims as contractors look to use alternatives that may not have, you know, gone through the normal vetting process.
So is it clear where contractors are getting these Chinese or Brazilian plywood? Are they finding those at just through their local distributors or those through big box? Like who's providing those materials and where should they stay away from?
Yeah, so, you know, it is local distribution. I'm assuming you can probably obtain it wholesale from other places, but it's primarily coming through distribution. And, you know, same with Chinese fastener. So it's just important to know what products you're buying and, you know, stick to the products, you know, make sure that whatever, you know, product you use has got the required standards, and has met all the qualifications in order to be used for your project.
Got it. And so are they seeing those claims on both commercial and residential?
Yes, okay. Absolutely. Absolutely. We've gotten a big uptick in all types of defect claims. I would say it's primarily fasteners and plywood. There are other flashing and other type of, you know, metal components and accessories that we've had some claims on. But it's just a problem because contractors are desperate. They're trying to use whatever they can to meet deadlines. And in doing so, they're sometimes using these defective products. Unfortunately, a lot of times this stuff is concealed and hidden. So you don't know about it until you've already put a full assembly on. So, really encourage, you know, contractors, vet your products, make sure you've got the right stuff. You know, if it's a choice between delay or a defect lawsuit, I'd take delay. So,
yes, no one likes delays, but sometimes it's better for sure. So the second thing that you and I were just talking about was that you were mentioned the Department of Labor has a new independent contractor rule that also sounds important for everybody to know about.
Yeah. So one of the things that we've talked about a bunch, Jill, is, you know, subcontractor usage by the construction industry. You know, it is recent stats that I've seen suggest that, you know, the residential market up to 60% or more uses subs, commercial somewhere between 30 and 40%. And subcontract labor is almost a necessity in certain markets because you can't find enough skilled labor to do work. So part of the issue that we've seen with the Biden administration is the desire to change the definition of what is an independent contractor. And this is important because if you are a subcontractor, then you are paying that subcontractor 1099. You're not doing withholding. You're not paying them W-2. You're not, you know, getting I-9s on them. You're not doing all the stuff that you would have to do if they were your employee. So what the Department of Labor has said is that they will be issuing a new independent contractor rule, which will more than likely favor unions and be more restrictive. Okay. They have said that there will be an opportunity for employers to have their say June 24th, and then workers will have a say on June 29th. But it is almost a surefire bet that it is going to mirror what we have seen coming out of the Biden administration to date, which is making it very difficult to classify something as a subcontractor as an independent contractor. As sort of background, the argument of employee versus independent contractor slash subcontractor, it really hinges on, you know, does that entity have true independence? Are they marketing separately from you? Do they only work for you? Do they, you know, wear your safety gear? All those types of things play into that determination. But I can tell you, Jill, and it's something that I'm really concerned about, I think the standard is going to be even more restrictive than that, which could spell trouble for the industry.
Yeah. So if you already are using a lot of subcontractors and you know that this is coming down, what are some things you should change to make sure that your subcontractors are either doing work for other people, so it's not just you? Like you just said something about your harnesses. Like, are they wearing your harnesses? What should you start changing to make sure that it's very clear that these guys you might not fall victim to this?
Sure. So, regardless of what the rule ends up being, it is not a ball or strike call. It's a very gray area, right? And what you have to start off with is a subcontract agreement that really spells out, you know, that they are independent, that they're in charge of their own safety. All of those types of things are incredibly important. Next thing that you want to do is make sure that, you know, your subs are working for others, you know, regardless of whether they're, you know, other entities that you may have, you know, worked with in the past, or they are completely separate entities. That helps the analysis. You know, make sure that they're wearing all their own safety gear, make sure they have their own company trucks or are riding in their independent trucks. The more arm's length that you can make the relationship between you and your subcontractors, the better off you're going to be. And it's good, you know, regardless of what the new standard is, you're going to have a much better chance at defending.
And so you mentioned about that subcontractor agreement. What should be written into that agreement? Is there, and how can a contractor get their hands on something like a template or something to look at to make sure that they've got the right things written in their agreement?
So what we like to do, Jill, is we like to do a master subcontract agreement, which has all the bells and whistles in it, right? It's fairly lengthy, but a subcontractor only has to sign it once. Then if you use that subcontractor on subsequent projects, you just have them sign a notice to proceed or proposal that references and incorporates the terms of the master subcontract agreement that was signed. So usually after that first time, it's just a one-page proposal or a one-page, you know, notice to proceed. The subcontract agreement has got to have everything from indemnification to insurance stuff in there to safety protocols to notice provisions, all types of things. Obviously, we're happy to help anyone that needs a subcontract agreement. We do it all the time. Another great resource is, you know, look to your local association and see what they have as far as legal resources.
Yeah, and speaking of local associations, it sounds like you just got back from Tennessee.
I did. I had a great opportunity to speak to TARC, the Tennessee Association of Roofing Contractors. Did a couple of great seminars. One was the latest on materials issue. Talked about some of these issues we just talked about today. And then I got to talk about insurance. We really did sort of a deep dive on all the insurance issues facing contractors, everything from, you know, CGL policies to assignment of benefits to subcontractor insurance, workers' comp, you name it. Had a ton of great questions, great group of people. Really encourage anybody in the Tennessee area to take a look at them. They are a fantastic group.
Very nice. Well, Trent, thank you so much for your time. If anybody has any questions for you, how do they get a hold of you?
Sure, just email me, trent.cotney@arlaw.com, or go to adamsandreese.com.
Fabulous. Well, and again, just like you were saying, if anybody has any questions for your local association or your national association, again, great people to get involved with, because there's lots of great connections, people you'll meet like Trent and other people that help out the associations all the time. And if you have any questions for us, it's roofingcontractor.com, wconline.com, or buildingenclosureonline.com. And while you're there, remember, as always, our content is free. So sign up for everything that you can receive. And most importantly, stay safe and healthy. And we look forward to talking to you next time. Yeah.